today will be mainly devoted to discuss what are the intricacies which are in cosmic ray experiments related to the search of peculiar effects like Lorentz transformations. I'm part, as Michele said, I'm theorist originally, but now I'm part, I've been in several experiments, now I'm the Ocean experiment, which is the largest cosmic ray experiment in the world, and the data, and this picture here is the cover page of the Science magazine. Almost exactly 1 year ago, when our result of the Federation of highest energy cosmic rays with active galactic nuclei were published. And I go through some points. The first one is as to why we think that cosmic rays experiments have something to do with Planck scale physics. And the way I become involved in this dates something like 11 years ago. There was a meeting in Grand Sasso of this experiment, the Piaget experiment, which was still in the project phase. And I presented some speculations at the time related with this experiment as a laboratory for test of special relativity. And the argument I made was very simple. The famous controversy between experiments about the so-called GCK cutoff of Wieser will tell something later. Was leading to some discussion, but the point, the real point which I was presenting, this effect, this process, is a low energy process because it's a very well known photo production process which is boosted at very large energies because. The photon, the target photons are very low energy, And then I concluded, say that if the Piaget experiment will find the sign of this cutoff, which I described better in the following, this would be a direct experimental verification equivalence of reference frames moving with this gamma factor. At that time, I was convinced of this. Now I will, toward the end of my seminar, I will show that this statement is at least not completely accurate. And it is one example of many incorrect or inaccurate or incomplete statements about Lorentz vibrations and cosmic ray physics, starting from, say, that this is the type of paper by Giovanni, some years ago, and the point here is that really when you talk about experiments in cosmic rays, it's difficult to say that there are paradoxes because, or at least it should be motivated because the experiments are difficult and the interpretation of the experiment is difficult. This is a statement by me, just 1 year ago in Trieste, I think, and I concluded Lorentz invariant vibration are in the shape, and I showed that this is inaccurate, and I will conclude this list with a quotation by Lee. The given evidence against Lorentz symmetry, this is not completely accurate. I will discuss this at the end. So, cosmic ray experiments are difficult. What is a cosmic ray experiment? At least at this very high end. Take a proton or an iron nucleus or whatever you want at 10 to 19, 10 to the 20 electron volts. This will interact in the top of the atmosphere, and after some propagation until one scattering length has passed, will interact and produce a lot of secondaries, which are mainly pions and other particles. The large number of these particles are pions, and for instance, the very high energy pions will typically decay into photons and give the origin to an electromagnetic cascade through processes which are very well known. And while the charged pions at these energies, essentially that they will not decay, they will interact, producing some other ions and other pions, which will then start re-decaying and so on. Remember that the lifetime of the pinot is very small, so essentially all the pinots decay instead of interacting, even at these high energies. And from time to time, a charged pi will decay and produce mainly at low energies and will produce muons. So at the ground level, one detects mostly photons. Electrons and positrons and muons, some hadrons which will survive during this cascade. And these particles interacting in the atmosphere produce fluorescence light through the excitation of the charged particles through the excitation of nitrogen molecules. So what one detects is discharged particles, and one can detect the fluorescence light if one is equipping the experiment with telescopes to detect this. So you see already from here that the experiment is very difficult because the interaction point is very far. You don't know what is the primary. You don't know exactly where the interaction point is. And of the 10 to the 12 particles which are produced, only a part reach the ground level, and only a very small part can be detected. Because one needs very, very large experiments which are sampling the particles which are detected. So from this, from the point of view of accelerator physics, this is a ridiculous way of proceeding, but nevertheless, one can try to obtain indications of the spectrum, on the origin, and on the nature of these particles. One other problem is that we are looking to this part of the spectrum. This is a compilation of several experiments, several cosmic-ray experiments, and we are looking at this part of the spectrum, the extremely high energies. And we know the harmonic, more or less know the harmonic. We have experimental indication of how the harmonic, the atoms behave up to these energies, which is the 1 TeV in the center of mass once converted in fixed frame experiments. So one needs a huge extrapolation to describe the data at this stage. And this is another source of problems on this kind of experiment. Just one technical point. The cosmic ray physicists, in order to have a better view of the structures in the spectrum used to multiply the spectrum, say, by some power of the energy, and this gives you an indication that something that dramatic is happening, while in many cases this is not the case. Again, to give an indication of the difficulty, this is the central part of the spectrum, which should be very, very well known. And this is the expression of the experimental data. And the amount of dispersion coming from an energy uncertainty of 15% is this one. So it is very difficult to reconcile different experiments. Because there are many experimental facts that have to be taken into account, those are theoretical facts in describing the interaction models. As I said, I've been discussing this part of the spectrum, and this, I'll come back to this in a moment. Of course, the same reason that we are in this part of the spectrum, we are so far from the non-experimental physics, is that makes this, among other things, makes these experiments interesting. We are far from the physics that we know. And just to give you an idea, if one would like to build a linear accelerator with the most up-to-date technology to reach these energies, it should have the dimension, the length of the radius of the Mars orbit around the Sun. So we'll probably never be able to produce particles of this energy. We have a very small flux in this energy, which corresponds to few events per square kilometer per second, so we need very large detectors. And this is how was the situation until 2 or 3 years ago. And this is a comparison between the one experiment in Japan, as experiment, and one experiment in United States using different techniques. And what you see here, we'll come to back to this feature of the spectrum, is so-called GCK cutoff, which I think everyone knows well. I'll just say a few things about that. The GCK cutoff, with a question about the use of the term cutoff, comes from the fact that the universe is not transparent by energy particles due to the presence of the CMP radiation. And protons can be lose energy to this interaction and also to production of electron positron pairs. And this simple trivial kinematics, and one finds that the threshold for the onset of this production is around 6 to 19 electron volts. And this implies that for instance, for protons, which lose essentially 10% of their energy in each interaction, the interaction length is around 5 megaparsecs, which means the following. Consider a proton produced, we'll discuss sources in a while, but consider a proton produced by some source at 10 to the 22 electron volts that will interact in the CMB field, lose energy in each interaction. Each interaction happens more or less each 5 megaparsecs. And we'll go below threshold for photo production at some energy, and then they will continue to, below this energy, they will continue to travel in the universe without attenuation. And there is a sphere, this defines a sort of a sphere from which which can contain the sources of the highest energy. Particles from lower energy can come from the universe. As I said, the name of cutoff is not very appropriate. In the following sense, if I look at a single source, then I would see a spectrum, and then superposed to this spectrum, the highest energy, there will be really an exponential cutoff. And this fact is probably been seen in very high energy sources of photons, TV energies of photons. However, with charged cosmic rays, We have an handful of events, and we cannot really follow the spectrum of a single source. And what we see is a distribution of sources. And what happens is that if you are at energy below the cutoff, you essentially see the whole universe. There are some problems here because you do not receive cosmic rays for the whole universe because there are redshift effects, evolution effects, and so on. So the essentially one receives low energy, relative. One can receive relatively low energy cosmic rays from a distance around the galaxy. When you are at energies above the threshold energy, then you suddenly see only a portion of the universe, which is of the order of some 100 megaparsecs. And then if you think about 1 minute, then the degrees on the spectrum, the ratio of the spectrum at high energy to the spectrum at lower energy of the GCK is simply given by the ratio of these two linear dimensions, which might be of the order of 1. So one has a really gentle decrease which appears dramatic only if the spectrum is multiplied by some power. This also says that cosmic rays with energies above the GZK threshold are indeed expected. The only point is they are coming from nearby sources. They cannot come from far sources. Yes?
In terms of astrophysical structures, how much is inside this radius or galaxy cluster? Or?
I'll say something later, but there are. I can anticipate some numbers. In the analysis the experiment has done with the correlation of AGNs, in a given catalog, which it might not be the most general one, there are something like 400 AGNs, 400 to 500 active galactic nuclei. I'll give more detail later. So, coming to the sources, now what can we say about the sources of cosmic rays at the extreme energies? We really don't know anything about the sources. We have some idea, of course, but we can make some general statement, which is the following. Assume that the cosmic rays you produce, you see, are produced by acceleration in some source, in some physical objects. Just I make a parenthesis here. There is an alternative view, which, however, I discuss later, to say that it is almost ruled out by the OGA data, which is that these particles are produced in the so-called top-down mechanism to the decay of very heavy particles. But this is, at this moment, it's strongly emphatic. So from now on, I will show a motivation for that later. But from now on, when talking about sources, I'm talking about astrophysical sources in which particles are accelerated. Then there is only a way to accelerate charged particles in astrophysical environment is through very magnetic field, time very magnetic field. But assume now that you have a sun region of linear dimension B where there is some very magnetic field which has a maximum value of B. And you want to use this region to accelerate charged particles. Of course, charged particles can be accelerated with some efficiency only if their Larmor radius is smaller than the dimension of the accelerated region. Otherwise, the particle will essentially not sense the presence of the possible accelerating cosmic ray, magnetic field. And this can be rewritten as a bound on the maximum possible energy which can be acquired during an acceleration process, which is which has to be less than the charge of the particle, the maximum magnetic field, and the dimension of the accelerating creature. And this is very general. I mean, if you work out acceleration mechanism, you always find something like this with some coefficient which gives you an efficiency of the mechanism. And in fact, this is an absolute maximum, and the efficiency will be typically a number which can be small or very small, depending on the specific mechanism and on the diagnosis. This relation can be put in a graph which is extremely useful to discuss sources. If I put here the logarithm of the size of the region and here the magnetic field, for instance, this is the dispersion of dimensions of neutron stars and their magnetic field, then this relation here converts in a line in this plane, and the sources which are on the left, on the right of this line, are the sources which can accelerate particles at this energy. This energy here is, for instance, energy of 10 to the 21 electron volts for protons, assuming unitary efficiency. And these are the lights corresponding to different energies. And the spots you see are possible sources. For instance, we think we know that for energies less than 10 to the 16 electron volts, the sources are galactic, and they are most probably the center of acceleration are supernova remnants through the Fermi mechanism, the diffusive shock wave acceleration mechanism, which works well and can explain the cosmic ray flux at relatively low energies. When we go to higher energies, this is a cartoon of the spectrum multiplied by some power of the energy. At higher energies, particles produced in the cosmic rays are probably extragalactic, although this has to be proved. The fact that they are extragalactic comes only from a plausibility argument, in the sense that they are not confined by the galactic magnetic field that can propagate freely in our galaxy and the galaxy that they produce. And then we are talking about these sources, which are essentially all active galactic nuclei. But, if the sources are extragalactic, which means that they have a distance which is the nearest galaxy is Andromeda, which is 3 megaparsec, but then the distance can be very dangerous. Then, if they are extragalactic, then the GCK effect on the spectrum is expected. On the other hand, it could be completely possible that the source, even at these energies, are galactic, because the neutron star, in principle, can accelerate particles at higher energy, although the energy losses can be severe. But there are models for this. So if they are galactic, then of course there is the distance the particles travel is very small, and on cosmological scales, and very small.
So can I ask you something very basic?
Yes.
So So how is it that with a stronger magnetic field, a charged particle gets more velocity or more energy? So what's the mechanism? Sorry for the question.
The mechanism in detail depends on the realization. Okay. For instance, in the case of acceleration neutron stars, it is just the rotating magnetic field which produces an electric field which accelerates part.
It's the electric field, right, that accelerates?
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
It's a varying magnetic field.
Ah, but, okay.
That cannot be a static magnetic field, of course, because in that case you don't accelerate. It's a magnetic field, for instance, which moves in the case of acceleration in supernova remnants. It is the magnetic field which moves with the plasma expelled in the explosion of the supernova. Okay. On the other hand, we see that there are very, very, very few sources that even with the maximum possible efficiency, or possibly no sources, that can accelerate particles at energies around 10 to the 21 electron volts, which might imply that the flux of cosmic rays we detect at Earth might be intrinsically cut at the sources. And it is somewhat of a coincidence that the GTK cutoff is on the same range of the energy where we do expect a cutoff in the a failure in the acceleration mechanism in the source. So what an experiment, a cosmic ray experiment, to say something about the GTK cutoff should exclude that what the experiment sees is due to a source effect. Okay, let's go on. So I will briefly now present, or maybe I can, this is a summary of what I said. Assume that you look at the spectrum of cosmic rays, you have two alternatives. You see a drop at certain end, or you don't see it. Assume that you don't see it. Then, if you can conclude by some mean that the sources are extragalactic, then it is very difficult to explain the absence of the. It would be very difficult to explain the absence of the drop without invoking some form of Lorentz invariant variation. But remember, I say if you don't see the drop, and if you have a convincing evidence that the sources are extragalactic. On the other hand, if you don't see the drop and the sources are galactic, you wouldn't conclude anything about Lorentz invariant. On the contrary, if the drop is present, then if it is associated with the sources, with sources which are only nearby and not too distant sources, then this would be an evidence for the GTK cutoff, and this would strongly constrain the possibility of Lorentz invariant variation. And if there is no association, that this would imply that instead that there is no GTK, but what one sees, there might be GTK in any case, but what one sees is due to the sources. Okay, so one in this case one can draw no conclusion about that. Okay, so the Auger experiment tries to overcome the systematic problems of the earlier experiments, which were only detecting or the particle which ground, as I said, these are you have to sample this shower of particles and And so you have, then you have to reconstruct the Hull cascade, which is a difficult job. And that depends on the models of hadronic interaction, the hadronic interaction of energies with you really don't know. Or you can detect the fluorescence light, which is convenient in a way, because this is that the amount of fluorescence light is directly proportional to the energy dissipated in the atmosphere. The atmosphere works as a calorimeter, and in principle, this gives you directly an energy measurement, apart from the fact that the causal proportionality depends from many factors, which are not related to hadronic physics, yeah? Are mainly related to the emission of the process of emission of light, which is a very low energy process, and the transparency of the atmosphere to detect to light, which has been emitted and detect that there's process. As I said, one needs a very large detector. In this case, the PRG experiment, the total area is 3,000 square kilometers, and the part which detects the particles which reach the surface is composed by 1,600 detector stations which detect charged particles spaced by 1.5 kilometers. So what is sampling this array of particles with the same sampling spacing of 1.5 kilometers. And also it consists of four telescopes which look over the whole experiment. I've been there a week before coming here, and because we have an annual meeting, and okay, the experiment is now completed, it's taking data, and we have by now a couple of years of data. And the whole design of the experiment is based on the possibility of detecting both the fluorescence light, which means detecting the longitudinal development of this cascade of particles, and the particles which arrive at Earth. And this provides a way of calibrating, of cross-calibrating the parts of the experiment, in the sense that with the fluorescent light, you directly, through this the knowledge of the atmosphere, I should say that there are several sub-experiments in the experiment which are dedicated to the study of the atmospheric transparency and so on. But when this is given, you measure directly the energy, and if you have events which trigger both parts of the detector, then with these events you can build a calibration curve, which gives you the energy seen in the fluorescence part versus some estimator of the energy, which I don't want to discuss here, measured by the surface detector. This is the kind of curve we build, and this gives a relation between the energy detected and this parameter here, which is one of the parameters of the surface detector. The systematic error is around 22-25%, which is mostly due to problems related to the propagation of light, fluorescence light. This is our last result on the spectrum. This has been published in this physical spectrum letters. And this is just the spectrum. Number of events, bin number of events, flux deduced by the bin number of events, versus the logarithm of the energy in the results. And this is not a fit, this is just a line I've drawn myself to the data. And you already see from here that there is a drop in the spectrum around an energy of 10 to the 19.5, which is around 6 to 99.
Question?
Yes.
Maybe you're about to answer. Yeah. That's one event. That, how many events do you have so now over the threshold?
Well, this is somewhat, this is some months ago. These are, I would say, around 100 events.
Was the number of events?
This number of events, yes. This, but these are published papers. If you want to discuss better the evidence for the drop, one, what one does normally if it's the lower energy part and then try to continue to highest energies. And when you do this, you multiply the spectrum by e to minus 2.6, which is the slope at lower levels, you find that there is an effect of a drop of six standard deviation, which confirms the analogous measurement by the IRS experiment. So there is definitely a drop in the spectrum. Now,
so when do you group some number of events into one point?
These are binned events. This is one event.
Each point is one event.
Yeah.
No, this one event.
This is a bin which contains seven events.
Yeah, but so bin in energy. So you just
bin
in energy.
Yes. Now before going on, let's say something about this. And let me repeat a thing that I've already said. The first question is, we have seen a drop. Is this a sure indication to take it off? No, because it can be intrinsic due to the sources. And does the existence of super GCK particles contradict the GCK feature? No, because this the GCK effect only implies that the sources are nearby.
So are the sources nearby?
Do you know?
These things. And I'm going to your question. If the ultra energy cosmic rays are produced in astrophysical sources, then at these energies we can hope to see their production directions, because if the particles are protons at this energy, they will be deviated in the galactic magnetic field, which is relatively well known, by some degrees. So they will point in some degrees to their source. Of course, this implies that the galactic magnetic fields are small, and there are measurements, but there are limits, but only in some directions. So this is a caveat of our results. Also, you might have asked me, why do you exclude that the primaries are photons? Because in fact it's difficult to distinguish a photon by a proton just detecting the particles which reach Earth. Well, this can be done, and these are the limits at different energies that have been put by our experiment. We don't see in our sample events that look like photon-like events. Okay, so we have no photon according to our definition of the photon, and this allows to put our some limits. And you see, these limits are really strongly constraining the so-called top-down models in which you produce particles by the decay of some heavy particles. If the GCK cutoff is operating, then we should see only nearby sources, which means that we know that nearby sources are anisotropic, while when you integrate over the whole universe, you get an anisotropic distribution of sources, so one can hope to see effects of this anisotropy. And of course, the most important point is that if we can prove statistically that there is a correlation with sources within, say, other megaparsecs. This will give indication on the sources and also prove, quote unquote, that what the drop we see is not due to an effect of the source, but it's due to the propagation in the universe. So we have our telescope is poor in this comparing with an optical telescope. This is our acceptance. And these are some of our events at different levels. I remind you that one EV is 10 to the 18 electron volts. So we are about 10 to the 18 electron volts. We start with a nicely isotropic distribution. This takes into account the fact that the acceptance of the experiment is not isotropic. You have to make correction to this, but this is very easy. And going to higher energy still looks isotropic until you reach energy around 5 or 6 in 10 to 19, where the events start to be anisotropically distributed. And this happens exactly when the energy where the flux has decreased by 1/2, our flux decreased by 1/2. Yes?
Is this anisotropy statistically insignificant? Obviously, if you have very few points, it will always
I'll say something about the statistics. Let me say, however, that the significance of the probability that this data are isotropically distributed is around the 1%, which from an astrophysical point of view is not a very low number. Okay? But there is what we can say is that we can reject isotropy at the 1% of confidence, which is not much, but that's because we have few data. We cannot do better than that.
So a small fraction of this could be photons, right?
No.
Because you said you put an upper limit on how what fraction could be photons.
The upper limit comes from the fact that in this sample we don't look events which are photon-like. Okay, so if you look from an experimental point of view, you don't see any photon in this sample. And this allows you to put that limit. If you had one photon-like event, the limit would be much worse. But I'll come back to this because they might not be problems, and I'll come back to this in a moment. Okay, so to prove or disprove the correlation, we have selected. I think you have seen this plot many times. These are the sources, the AGNs, as I said, selected from a given catalog within less than 10 to point of 18, and the circles are the events which are published last year. This is somehow the evidence for the correlation. We scan with some procedure which I can describe, but it will take time. If you like, I describe someone else can describe. But we do a scan in both in radius of the angular radius we search for, the redshift and the energy threshold, and we find minima around 3 degrees around 0.18 and around 57. And what we conclude is that anisotropy has been established with more than 99% of constant level, which means that in 1%, we have a probability of 1% to be wrong. And this provides evidence that the observed steepening in the cosmic ray spectrum at the highest energy due to the GCK effect and non-consideration of the sources. exercising. Problems, there are some open issues. The statistic was low. This is 1 year ago. Now, I shouldn't really show this. As I said, I was at the meeting in Argentina last week. And what we have now, we will present our data probably at the International Cosmic Ray Conference, which will be in Poland next summer. But we still are around the 1% probability of isotropy. We still see correlation of local to local matter distribution, and we need something 30 more events, which at the present rate means 2.5 years to be conclusive. What I can say, but you are not authorized to repeat it, is that the correlation has not become stronger in this last year. There are some other small problems. The energy seems a little bit low. This would imply a GZK horizon 200 megaparsec instead of 75 corresponding to Z point of the 18, but this is well within our indetermination energy. And the other possible problem is that there is some hint that a part of our particles are not protons, but higher the higher atomic number and so higher charge particles. So we probably see a mixed composition of particles around the Earth. And this might be a problem because, of course, particles with higher charge are more deviated in the galactic magnetic field, so they will not point directly to the source. There have been many papers already in the web of these facts, and there are explanations to everything, essentially, but we have to have more data. And of course, this interpretation is strongly dependent on the hadronic interaction models.
Is the GZK cutoff in the same place for iron?
As far as I know, for iron nuclei is essentially in the same place. Although it comes mostly from the photodissociation of the nucleus in the CMB. It's not directly related to.
So it's not iron production.
Not directly by iron production. And one other possible issue is that IRS experiment, which is on the northern hemisphere, doesn't see any sign. And also on that, there are many papers of explanations. So we have to wait for that.
So what the IRS doesn't confirm the association with local
with the same kind of galactic nuclei.
But IRS is looking at another, the other.
Yes, it's looking at the other part of the hemisphere.
Yes, so two questions. One is that you said the correlation hasn't become stronger.
No, has not become stronger.
But don't you expect it to be stronger if you have more events?
Yes.
More events would be better.
I will not. I will not say anything more. but the statement I can make that we are still below the 1% of probability of isotropy.
So the other question is, have you tried, or anybody tried correlation with other surveys other than that?
Yes. I have some slides we have tried. As a matter of fact, there is some very nice paper by our collaborator, which tries to compare with other catalogs. There have been some external paper comparing with the X-rays, ARDA, AGS, and so on. So this has been done.
The means.
Yes. And so I'm just in time. Now, what are the consequences for black scale physics? If these results are confirmed,
then this, so there is the GCK cutoff, and this is evidence from GCK cutoff, which means that if you start from, if you parameterize Lorentz event vibration by looking at the spatial relation, that the most simple model in which these parameters here are all the same for the particles is essentially true. Okay? However, this is a point, essentially, or a line in the parameter space. And you might allow that that these parameters are different, in different for different particles. From a naive point of view, I would say, in fact, in our first paper, we used only a single parameter because we would say, OK, it comes from quantum geometry, so it is a it is through geometry, so why it has to be different from different particles. But if you talk with people doing effective field theory, for instance, they are using a lot of parameters. So really there is no, or there is little theoretical reason to say that all the parameters are equal. Well, if all the parameters are equal, this would imply that that Lorentz invariance violation starts with. There are some, as I said, there are some interesting constraints if one is in this condition, for instance, in the case, the stronger case, which might be theoretically unfavorable, but for some other reasons, then there is a small region which is still allowed means that Lorentz invariance is violated, but the GCK cutoff is essentially at the same place. It's very easy to obtain this if you release the condition of the coefficients are equal. This is in the case of n equal 2, which is a weaker violation. And there might be interesting effect on this. So this is why I'm saying that it is not accurate to say that results disfavor Lorentz invariant relation, because you can build models in which you have Lorentz invariant relation and still have the GCK. Nothing personal about that.
N equals 1, what would you say about N equals 1?
N equals
1. No, but for N equals 1, is it so easy to conspire to?
No, N equals 1 is still you have this region here. That's really, it takes you half an hour to derive the relation.
So it's not surprising if you give the proton defined different parameters that you can fiddle with it to cancel the effect. That's what you're saying.
Yes. And the relation, I did it. The relation looks somewhat natural because it's related to the mass of the particles. And okay, we are talking about confined hadrons which are composite, and we really don't know what we are talking about. If I'm taking on a very, very phenomenological point of view and leave these parameters as perfect. However, even in this case, as I said, if you take this all equal, that this case is disfavored, this is. I'm correct. And the reason is subtle, and it's been pointed to me by Giovanni this summer, and there is some work in preparation with Giovanni and Stefano Liberati and other people on this. And the reason is the following. If you want to push the GCK threshold at infinity, you have to choose minus sign here if this is positive. And in this case, what happens is that unstable particles are kinematically forbidden to decay above a certain threshold. Okay? And this threshold is not high, it's of the order between 10 to the 14 and 10 to the 18 electron volts, depending on the model. Which, okay? 4 piles, for instance. And this is particularly important for neutral pions, which produce the most of the part by their decay to photons, the most of the particles you see at this level. And
remember that you produce a few very high energy pions at the beginning of the cascade. If they cannot decay, then they will interact and give more energy to the hadronic part of the cascade. And of course, this has to be taken into account before deriving the anisolarity part. So I think I've essentially finished. Let me just say that, as you might know, as you probably know, the W special relativity is not affected by these limits because due to the framing variance, essentially, that the GZK feature is not changed, but it's changed by a very small amount. And but it would be very interesting to see if there are, we know that the SR theories have. Can have phenomenological consequences, but the only one I know is through the velocity dependent, the energy dependent speed of light. And it would be very nice to see if there are other aspects of the cosmic ray experiment which are accessible to prove or disprove the SR. This, and so these are my conclusions. We start to have very high statistics on cosmic ray experiments, so we can start to think about cosmic ray astrophysics. We may have detected the cosmic ray sources. The GZK feature has been probably detected, but ultra high energy cosmic energy is complex, so ultra energy cosmic physics complex. So time is needed. Maybe next year I will come to give some update on these things. And concerning Lorentz invariant vibration, the parameter space begins to be constrained, but the full consequences, Lorentz invariant vibration, the experimental detection of cosmic rays are to be taken into account. And, unfortunately, in cosmic ray physics, shortcuts are not allowed. You have to think to all the consequences of a given theoretical proposal, and you cannot jump to some conclusions just looking at the spec. And of course, the SR is not constrained by this. Results, but I would like very much to find some aspect other than the velocity, the energy dependent speed of light that would be present. Thank you.
I want to ask two questions about the experiment.
Yeah.
What is the time delay that exists between the electronic reception of the shower and the amount and your the understanding of the energy and the direction that the original particle came from? Is it done in milliseconds? Does it take 2 minutes? What is the
you mean the reconstruction?
The reconstruction. Can it be done electronically?
Yes, it is done electronically.
So it's immediate.
What is immediate is the recording of the of the data, and then the data are processed to give the energy of that.
How long does that processing take?
The recording is immediate.
The recording is immediate, but is the information where the particle came from, the direction?
Well, this only depends on the power of your computer.
Okay.
It's on the data are already there.
Second question.
Yeah.
In any of these extremely high energy events,
yes.
Do you ever see any gamma bursts at the same time?
Any gamma bursts
at the same time? Is that or is that just a completely irrelevant?
What do you mean by a gamma burst?
I mean a gamma burst with high energy coming down at the same, roughly the same time as the as that cosmic ray came down.
Roughly the same time is within
within microseconds.
Within microseconds, then there will be confusing the same event. This will show up in say a double a doublet structure in the lens. We don't have seen that.
You do not.
But we can. We didn't put limits. We discussed about it. But with the present data we have, we do not put limits on that.
Any comments? Question.
Can I ask what's the origin of the error bars in the number of events?
You can ask, but I don't know. I don't know. The point is that there is a statistical analysis which is done, which takes into account the number of events and the width of the bin and so on.
Because you
are more about the fact that it's one event and which has its error bar.
Okay. No, I'm just curious because I would put an error bar on the energy because
okay, there is also an error bar of the energy which I didn't show, which is somewhat larger than the bin width.
It's larger than the bin width. So is it the error on the error on the number of events, is it because that event can be either in that grid or in the next
grid?
No.
Just pass on
the
error.
This is another, you have a systematic error in the energy which has been evaluated at 20%. And it's not shown in that graph. It was shown in some other graphs as a bar, as a horizontal bar. Yes.
I just want to clarify some point. Because the GDK, the origin of GDK is just from the nearby AGN, according to your because it's very, very near to us, so you assume the background at that time is just Minkowski. Because what you consider is just a very local.
Yeah, no, very local, not so much. I mean, it's 100 megaparsecs, which contains a lot of galaxies.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
Not so local, but it's local.
So what you assume, the background, that's time background that you assume is just Minkowski. It's the best time. What I want to say is the GDK claim is obtained.
No, I think I have understood. In the evaluation of what is the radius, the GDK horizon spectrum with some energy, you take into account also energy loss, the redshift of the protons. But this is more, because they are up to Z equal less than 0.018. That's a small effect. Of course, when you want to describe the flux or lower energy particles, which can come from much more more distant, then you have to take it detail into account, and then you have to insert the cosmological model on that.
But for GDK, the result does not depend on what kind of cosmological model.
Not too much.
Because it's nearby.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. One thing, I'm a bit confused by the last thing you said about the decay of pions, which in case of Lorentz Meyer violation is in some way forbidden, the last thing you said.
Yeah.
So in that case, you might need to reconsider the whole reconstruction of the shower you do in your experiment.
We're not doing that.
Yeah, but so basically, that would go against what you conclude, though, because your reconstruction on the shelf doesn't take into account that.
I said that. This statement is incorrect. The statement I mean is incorrect, because it is done without taking that into account. And we are in the process of doing that. I mean, we write a paper with Giovanni, but we also. I will push inside the collaboration to take these effects into account. Yes, because otherwise you can, in my opinion, you cannot safely. But in this case, probably the result doesn't change.
But once you know how the result would have changed, could you just go back and do a posteriori analysis of the data, or that's
done? Okay, this will not change the things like the correlation. Only change the
reconstruction
perspective. Okay, but this will mostly affect the spec in the presence. Might mostly affect the presence.
So it sounds like you're not ready to talk about the result yet, but so the situation is that pions don't decay.
Yes.
They fall.
All the stable particles do not decay most
of them. But then they hit they still hit the ground detectors as charged particles.
Sorry?
They still hit the ground detectors as charged
particles. No, they will reinteract in the atmosphere. Typically, this energy here is around 10 to the 14 electron volts, between 10 to the 14 and 10 to the 18, depends on the amount. So what happens in the foreign? Take a pain off, which would decay into very high energy gammas. It is forbidden to decay, and then it will reinteract in the atmosphere. As a charged bias, there is no difference in the interaction, charged bias and neutral pions, apart from the fact that neutral pions or pions typically do not interact because they have a very short lifetime. So if it doesn't decay, it will reinteract and produce other pions or other particles. Okay. So this will shift some energy from the electromagnetic part of the cascade, the energy which will be due to the decay of pionot to gammas, to the hadronic part of the cascade. So this doesn't change. I mean, and then after a few interactions, the energy of the pions will be below this energy, and so they will decay, and this only will change in a quite subtle way.
So your expectation is that this won't change the conclusion much.
My expectation is that this conclusion here, if all the parameters of all the parameters are equal, would change. We have done some simulation, and I think we have to check it, but I think this would not change. But if the parameters are different, then things become a bit more difficult. It has to be. And also, one has to take into account possible violation of the gamma sector, which they are strongly limited, they are strongly constrained. There might be effects of photosynthesis.
Any other comments?
In your search for a correlation with the active nuclei, you mentioned this problem. You just use a straight line propagation, or have you tried putting in logs?
We use straight line propagation, and one possibility to avoid there is a problem with the galactic disk, of course, because the particles pass through the galactic disk are more strongly deviated than the particles which come from outside the disk, just travel a small distance. So one can analyze, and we have done it also, one can analyze the data without including the galactic disk. But of course, one could take into account also the we haven't done yet. Of course, you can do something for the galactic magnetic field, which is relatively, there are models at least, the galactic field, but it's much more difficult for the galactic field.
But do you remember your data is radio observations, so to establish the correlation, will be good for.
I think these are mostly the catalog we use. Is I think is in reality is a collection of surveys, and I think mostly are in the optical. We didn't use the radio luminosity, although there are suggestions that the acceleration might be
might be more efficient in radio lobes of the galaxies, but we didn't enter in that detail now.
Any comments? If not, let's thank Aurelio again. Until tomorrow, right? So catch you in 5 minutes time.